This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, it's 8:46 a.m. Wednesday, the 28th of December. I'm Melissa Idris with Gerard Kutten and Julian Ng. You're listening to The Morning Run. Let's take a look now at some of the biggest news, business headlines of the day. We've got Bank Negara. They have initiated enforcement actions under the Financial Services Act against an unnamed financial institution for its currency dealer's misconduct involving the fixing of the dollar-ringgit exchange rate. So this is, in fact, the first enforcement move involving currency manipulation taken by Bank Negara. And this is since the central bank reiterated, I think, the NDF trading, the offshore trading of the ringgit, is not recognized. And Julian, you think this is a huge signal that it's sending to the market?
I think so. But I do also think that the first step in sending a strong signal is to name and shame, right? So Bank Negara should come right out and say which the errand bank is that they're investigating. But nevertheless, a strong signal it is, I think, even to the extent of Bank Negara doing an audit on the errand bank and a banking staff was found to have been fixing the dollar ringgit exchange rate in the NDF market. You know that NDF, those are like bad words in Bank Negara's eyes right now. And I think that banks wouldn't want Bank Negara on its case, on its back. They probably want to take this as some kind of a lesson.
Well, just correct me if I'm wrong. The NDF itself is a practice that happens globally. A lot of central banks, even in the region, have a kind of worked with the pricing that happens through this NDF process, right? So we have in Malaysia chosen not to recognize the NDF transactions. Is that it? Have we criminalized
that?
We don't stop
at non-recognition. We go one step further in saying that is illegal, that's unlawful, and it's unrecognized. I think the best way to explain this is through the example of gambling. For example, you can gamble in other places, but you can't gamble in Malaysia. The problem with the ringgit is that they can't stop people from making bets about the ringgit offshore. But if you are licensed in Malaysia, then Bank Negara has that locus standi to tell you what you can do and what you can't do.
So right now, the central bank has kind of taken action against this unnamed bank because this bank didn't notify Bank Negara because of one of its dealers had done, I don't know, a transaction offshore and no notification was given to Bank Negara, and that's where the misconduct was, is it?
Yeah, I see. Exactly. Okay. I think the question then the other banks would ask is if they were very healthy profit-making institutions, that they would ask, how can we skirt these rules to benefit our customers? And it's hard to do that because recently there was a kind of fine made by Bank Negara and Macquarie and ANZ banks. And these are not Malaysian banks. These are, you know, based in Australia and New Zealand. They agreed to pay a fine of 15 million Aussie dollars after admitting to an attempted cartel to fix our benchmark rate. So I think Bank Negara's influence actually go far beyond our shores as well. I don't think that this will, in a way, stop banks from fully trying to get away with things if they can.
Okay, so NDFs until very recently were completely kosher. They were completely legitimate transactions.
I don't know if they were completely kosher. I think it was kind of a one-eye-closed situation.
But the ringgit is one of the most actively traded emerging market currencies in the NDF market. I think about 60% of ringgit trading is done offshore. Daily, the average daily turnover is nearly 13 billion US dollars. So that's a huge market right there. Okay, well, let's take a look at other stories. We've got a Malaysian official from EPF clarifying that Malaysians working abroad are eligible to make contributions to the EPF via the One Malaysia Retirement Savings Scheme, or also known as
SPIM.
What does that stand for? Okay, anyway.
No, more important, what kind of image does that conjure in your mind?
SPIM, it rhymes with
brim.
Okay. And Malaysia. So Malaysians now below the age of 55 can register as EPF members. They can make contributions to savings until they reach retirement age. This was a clarification coming out of EPF because there were allegations or perceptions that those working abroad were in fact not eligible for EPF contributions.
I think the question was also why people who are earning foreign currency from abroad through their income would want to contribute to EPF. Is this EPF's way of spinning the question of, you know, this long queue, like conjuring this idea of a long queue outside EPF doors, you know, knocking on the doors, clamoring to have their funds be given to EPF to manage. I think there is merit in how EPF manages our funds because they manage them very cheaply, only 27 basis points. And that's more that can be said about commercial rates of fund management, which are very, very expensive. There is this other thing as well. Instead of putting your money in EPF, for example, should you put your money in PRS? And I think where PRS is concerned, they're also quite expensive, but they allow for a more global and regional diversification and also allows for a more aggressive portfolio than how the EPF manages it. But I just think that even with a PRS, it's not as efficient as, say, the robo-advisors, which can offer those diversification and cost-efficient benefits quite well as well. But not a lot of people know about robo-advisors and know how to give their money to the robos.
So PRS being private retirement schemes.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so again, there's no way to force the employer. Say you're working overseas, right, Sharad? There's no way to force employers, your boss, to make an EPF contribution.
No, apparently not.
No, this is totally voluntary.
Yeah. And so, you know, and the question, of course, is why would you want to send your money back home instead of, say, keeping it in the currency that you're earning in those countries?
I think with the assumption that you one day intend to come back home and retire here in Malaysia, right?
But in the meantime, wouldn't it be better to keep your money in a currency that's perhaps potentially appreciating or stable offshore and until that time when it's necessary?
I think that's a misnomer, though. You don't want to keep it in a currency. You want to be, for the purpose of long-term retirement investments, to be investing it in a global portfolio. So if you had invested into an Apple or Samsung, they are effectively your FX managers because they sell globally. They sell in South Korea, in Turkey, in Uganda. You know, if the Ugandans can afford, Ugandans can afford an iPad, you know, Apple would go there and sell, and the Samsung would sell the Samsung phones the world over. Samsung is not committed to a currency like South Korean won because, you know, their sales are global, and they become your de facto foreign exchange managers.
Well, speaking about the weakening ringgit, Malaysian travellers and consumers are becoming more cost-conscious, especially in light of the weaker ringgit. This, according to a survey by UOB, United Overseas Bank. They titled this the Affluent Consumer Survey 2016. So on average, the affluent Malaysian, 9 out of 10 affluent Malaysians travel overseas on holiday at least once a year. And I think that's quite a high level. 9 out of 10 affluent Malaysians. What is an
because
affluent
everyone
Malaysian?
Can fly now.
What is an affluent Malaysian actually? Joel?
Someone who has $500,000 ringgit in their savings.
Okay, so that's
the
how they've
liquid meaning like
no
cash.
just assets. 500,000 in assets. Yeah,
in assets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, so that's not. I mean, that's considerable middle income. So 9 out of 10 middle income.
Because if you include your property, that will probably take you up to $500,000 already, right? If you
yeah, but most people's net ownership of the property is very small because a big part of that would still be in loans. So you can't consider that as part of fully owned assets, mainly owned by the banks in the early years. But what do you guys think
that just takes me out of the running.
what do you guys think of this cost-conscious traveling? How would you turn your travel into something that's cost-conscious?
So now I have to say you can still go overseas on a budget, right? Like with everyone can fly budget airline, everyone can go overseas even though it's not premium traveling anymore. Even if the weaker ringgit, you could still go overseas.
Yeah,
but just live budget lah.
I wonder, you know, over the last couple of decades, how travel has become so central to the way in which people define their pleasures, you know, with middle-class Malaysians. I mean, there used to be those travel agencies, you know, you'd think of families going every so often. But now it's like everybody, even on a weekend, flies somewhere. People go for concerts. And, I'm talking about young people with no discernible income, you know, getting money from
Coldplay,
their parents.
For example.
Yeah, you know.
That was crazy expensive. Coldplay in Singapore, nobody could get the tickets, and it was one of the most expensive Coldplay concerts in the world.
Yeah. So what the most successful marketing campaigns, I think, has been to, you know, sort of get Malaysians on the bandwagon for travel, you know, whether luxury or budget, but the idea that one, you know, can or should spend one's money on these things.
Okay, so according to this UOB survey, Malaysian consumers now with a yen for travel are choosing Asian destinations to maximize their purchasing power. In fact, their preferences for Asian travel is aided by the increasing number of flights within the region and also competitive prices. So very related to what
they're going
you
just
to
Singapore
mentioned.
And Thailand. How is Singapore cheaper? Singapore is a developed country with developed market pricing, and yet 40% of the people surveyed chose to go to Singapore. The other 40% also chose to go to Thailand. And by the way, the ringgit has weakened so much that from the perspective of Big Mac Index, Malaysia is right now more expensive than somewhere like Thailand or Indonesia.
But in terms of the comparison would be a European holiday. It'd take you that much more to get to Europe, whereas, you know, maybe when you land, the cost would be comparable, but still.
Also, Singapore, you can drive down, and then you can sleep in JB, and still going to have breakfast in
Singapore. Sleep with your cousin in their flat.
I don't think you want to sleep in JB and commute all day, but you know,
JB is quite far away from Orchard Road.
Well, not really,
if you were cost conscious, you wouldn't go there to shop. but I think Malaysia is trading their currency weakness for the overall cheaper cost of living in many of these ASEAN countries. For example, if you went to Vietnam or Cambodia, I think you can argue that the cost of living there would be cheaper, even though you're paying more now for the exchange rate.
Well, you know, Jules, if we talk about Vietnam and look at Vietnam's markets, its equity markets, the stocks in Vietnam are actually pricier than their Southeast Asian peers. This is happening for the first time in 2 years. And according to Bloomberg, it's about to get more expensive. So the Vietnam market's valuation is expected to continue rising in 2017 because of the upcoming listings of attractive companies there.
Yeah, everybody is pouring money into Vietnam. The one benchmark by which a market is measured as to how expensive or cheap it is called the price-earning ratio. And the P.E. ratio for Vietnam right now is trading about 16 times. That's above the ASEAN index, which is about 15 times. And Malaysia itself is 16.4 times. So in investors' eyes, Malaysia or Vietnam is as valuable as Malaysia. And Singapore is even not that valuable. Singapore is 12 times, which either reflects its cheapness or it's the fact that people don't desire to invest in Singapore. And Hong Kong itself is also around 11 to 12 times. So this is the classic growth market type valuation that investors are pouring a lot of money into.
Have you both visited Vietnam?
Never.
I have. I've been to Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi.
Yeah, I think it's a
great country.
I've only been to Hanoi, and it is very beautiful. If you're going to have a cheap holiday, maybe Hanoi is the place. I don't know about cheap, but it's certainly a good holiday.
Yeah, okay. We've got the opening numbers on Bursa Malaysia coming up next. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.